Wouldn't it be great if three idiots picked apart each episode of your favorite podcast?
We do that. Wouldn't it be great if we discussed the newest episode, ongoing theories, and predictions for what comes next?
We do that. Wouldn't it be great if they didn't ruin the podcast at all and kept everything spoiler-free?
We don't do that. You've been warned.
We do that, the Taz Fancast. I'm your co-host, Chris.
And I'm distraught that my boy wasn't in this episode.
And I'm your other co-host, Colin.
This week's episode, Amnesty, episode 15.
Okay, so a quick synopsis. The gang meets Mothman, gets some premonition, and rushes to save some people from a tram gone crazy. I didn't think of... The word.
Let's get crazy indeed, as Ozzy Osbourne said. I want to dive right into it this week because I am really kind of feeling this new narrative structure that Griffin's got going on. I think it's really, really cool. I think this plot is turning out much more interesting than I would have thought, but I want to start with Mothman. I don't know anything about the Mothman.
I don't either. He wears glasses.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to set that baseline before we dove into this because I imagine there are things that would have happened in that exchange that might have been elucidating by the environment or things of that.
Well, it's actions. Like whatever the Silver Bridge, like that's a real thing. Like,
okay, so that was one of my big questions because that's where I wanted to go next.
That's a real thing.
Okay, did you Google it?
Well, I am currently Googling it. But I knew it was a thing.
Well, I did. When they first mentioned the Mothman, I Googled it. I think it's weird because I think he only dates back to like the 60s, which I think is interesting.
So another kind of new cryptid, really, yeah. For the length of the world.
Which I think we've sort of talked about before, the use of bringing in cryptids into this environment. It's interesting because they have... You know, he has a system by which to do it. Griffin does, in a sort of logical way. I don't know if I love that, but I think it's interesting.
Yeah, and especially not knowing anything about the Mothman, the way that the characters interacted with him definitely didn't necessarily. They knew anything about the Mothman. I think I didn't really get that vibe from it.
Yeah, I totally felt like agreed. They were there. They were learning with us. You know.
Yeah,
Duck so, knew some. Which makes sense because right. He's the longest West Virginia resident.
Yep.
And then the rest of it just sort of came along, and it was like, oh well, I'm explaining this to my.
So that does clear up for me though, Jake, because my question was about Silver Bridge, how Duck just sort of launched into it right away.
Oh yeah, no, it was a.
So that would just be a very fair common knowledge kind of thing.
Yeah. So it was a bridge that was full at rush hour, and it collapsed.
I thought you were going to say a bridge that was silver.
I guess it could be.
I was not going to be okay with that. Is Mothman connected to it at all?
Were Mothman sightings near the bridge, and I think the question has always been, well, why?
Was he involved?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
That's probably a really fun bit of trivia to put in for like West Virginia listeners and anyone who probably knows more than the three of us, which is a lot of everyone.
Yeah,
which is everyone.
Yeah.
But I think that sequence came together really well. I do have some questions. And I know we've sort of talked about maybe trying to separate our narrative and meta discussion. So I have a meta question, but I want to bring it in right now because I think it's relevant. How did you guys feel about the either editing work or pre-pro work they did to get the Mothman's premonitions of what they were saying to line up with the PC's
questions? I thought that was just post-work by Griffin.
Yeah, I assume it was, but I think it's an interesting thing to think about, that if he's doing post-production work to add in NPC dialogue to a lot of quote unquote live recording. What is that?
I think you have gone way down a rabbit hole that you don't need to be going down, because, oh, he's adding music to this recording. Oh, he's adding sound effects to this recording.
Well.
Oh, he's
so here's
no.
Here's
and so the question, it was just duplicated audio. And
but here's
that's
a question
fine.
I have: is when I heard that duplicated audio, I almost thought of it as sort of when you see a TV show or movie and it shows a clip of like what's going on in their head. I interpreted it as like this is what Mothman is thinking, what they're going to say right before they say it.
Oh, that's cool.
And not he is saying it at the same time.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
I like that interpretation a lot better. Because I felt betrayed is a strong word. Yeah. But I felt it was against the spirit of the podcast to have Griffin go back later and add NPC dialogue to make it do the cool liney uppy thing. But I think if we're getting live dialogue from the player characters with the Mothman's inner narration, that's very cool, and I like it even more.
That well, and the reason I say that is because nobody reacted to it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. if the intent was that Mothman was saying it out loud, I think they would have said, Aubrey would have said, "What are you doing?"
Right, or how do you know something? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, I like that.
So I do. It kind of reminds me of like the Vocaloids in the Crystal Kingdom. How he added those, he would just sing the song, well, maybe probably just say the song to the player characters and then add in the Vocaloids.
Yeah. Right, to make it be actually in character later.
Right. So they never reacted to how it sounded, even though it was strange. One thing narratively about Mothman that sort of interested me is the fact that, is it happenstance or luck or something else besides that they just happen to be real close to all of these places where all this stuff's about to go down when he tells them.
I want to spend some time talking about this for sure, because they took 3 minutes to walk 100 feet down the street and then in 2 minutes got it from Mothman's trailer to the top of the ski mountain. Not the bottom, as we learn, the top.
Yeah, it's... There's some, like, portal shit going on. It's... Like, they are...
Like, is Griffin just bad at distance? Like, I know that can be a thing, and he's trying to move stuff along, and it's probably less exciting if the Mothman had said, in 30 minutes, the thing's going to collapse. But 30 minutes is a reasonable amount of time to leave his trailer, get there, evacuate some people, and then have the thing break.
Yeah, when he said it was 6 minutes, I thought they were just looking at their watch. Oh shit!
Yeah, oh, it's gonna be bad.
I guess we'll tell the police to head on over, but you know we're not at the top of the mountain,
right? Because I think that could have set up like, oh, 6 minutes. Fuck, Juno's, you know, Officer Juno's on duty. I'm gonna call her and maybe she can evacuate it. And she's there, and then it becomes this whole thing. And instead of having, it removes the moments. All the moments of them trying to stop the collapse of the train car, but it does open up a fun back end of like Juno being like, why did Duck know that? And having to explore that a lot more than they had to engage with in this episode, at least.
Yeah, and I think that's fair considering, I think it could be interesting to explore the space of these NPCs being involved, you know, these not knowledgeable NPCs being involved with the Pine Guard, like Pigeon, whom we haven't heard from since.
Again, right.
Or Kirby, who we haven't seen in several episodes.
Yeah, people who know slightly too much and should be asking more questions.
And should be killed, right.
Well,
I'm okay. Sorry, I'm just used to balance, where...
Yeah, over, they haven't found a convenient cliff. Yeah. We talked about that last episode.
Yeah, well, apparently they have, because Ned drove off of one.
I think that was just a strong use of the word cliff.
I think so too. That is jumping ahead a little bit, but maybe we can transition from Mothman to the scene at the tram station.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I liked the station a lot. I think that there was some really good opportunities for our characters to sort of get out there and explore what makes them in the story. You know, they all reacted in very, what felt like, natural ways for the characters.
Yeah, I agree. I really liked this episode. I realizing that I really liked the last episode.
Yeah, I really think they're hitting their stride in story and in gameplay that we'll talk about.
Yeah, Griffin is running this new weird like D&D episode of 24 thing with the way he's taking on scenes, and I think it's really cool. I think he's doing a really good job of keeping the pacing going. We're like, all right, let's, you know, you can't resolve everything at once, even though we all know it's happening together. So him being able to say, all right, let's resolve this, and I'm going to let you get two steps into the process, and then I want to go see what Duck's doing.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to let you resolve that. And I think Griffin, for a lot of the faults that we put upon him and that he does make, is doing a really nice job of getting the pacing right and how this episode's, this arc and this sort of campaign needs to be different than anything that we did in Balance.
Mm-hmm.
That the it's set now, the pacing is much more real time, and I really like that it's sort of just like, all right, we're just going to tackle this one by one, we're going to get a couple moves in, and then I want to know what else is happening. And it's really nice. It's really working out well for me.
What? Yeah, and I think that's something where it's easy to forget in D&D that, you know, a turn in combat is 6 seconds.
Yes.
You know, and so that's a place where we sort of just assume that all of this stuff is happening on a different time frame, and then sort of trying to take that time frame back and put it on the real world is weird. And I think what you're saying is true, that Griffin is sort of tackling well how to do that now.
Well, and I think it'll be interesting. And what I would like to see is Griffin actually be a little more demanding of his player characters, by which I mean, you know, Aubrey chooses to do something. I'm going to go talk to the engineer. And then she chooses to go try and push the tram car off of its tracks. And then she chooses to go with Ned. And I don't think those could all be choices made within the same however long it was. It didn't feel like enough time to be able to do all of those things.
I think it can be if you take it as, which I think is the way Travis is playing it, as she didn't do any of those things. She just made those three decisions in her head in rapid succession and didn't follow up on any of them. You know? Like, I'm going to talk to the engineer. Oh, fuck. Wait, I should try to blow the car over. Oh, don't fuck it up. Oh, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to go with Ned. Like, Ned has a plan. I'm just going to follow him.
Sure. But she did talk to the engineer.
Right. She yelled at him a little bit.
She yelled at him a little bit, and he took off running down the hill. She did try to push the car over and rolled poorly on her one attempt. And then she got into the car with it's so I would like to be one of those things that, hey, Travis, I'm you know, maybe you could try to push the car over, but you can't go with Ned. Or Ned can't ask you to go along because otherwise he's not gonna catch the car. And so,
well, especially on a poor roll, that could have been an easy hard move, like, okay, you did that, but now you're exhausted and don't have the energy to go on. Like, you're stuck here.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're veering into mechanics, and I know we want to get there because I think that ties through everything. So let's wrap up talking about what happened this episode. So let's move away from this collapse and talk about what Duck saw.
Yeah, okay. It's Vincent? It's not Vincent?
It's not Vincent.
It's Vincent's cousin?
Maybe Vincent's cousin.
It's Vincent's Jack's cousin.
Here's my question, though. If Thacker went crazy in Sylvain, would not the opposite be true?
I don't know. It's
that Thacker doesn't go insane in the real world? Yes, that would very much be true.
No, that Sylvans go insane on Earth.
I don't. It hasn't happened to the other selves on the
Earth. But they all have a thing. Like, they talk about having a bracelet or whatever that causes them to transform back into their Sylvan form from sort of their human form.
That's true, and between that and the hot spring, it could be, it could very well be that they need, it's just interesting that they went out of their way to tell us that they needed Sylvan or Sylph threads on them when they're over in Sylvain, but the only thing they've made for the Sylphs on this side is basically, this will keep me from being my Sylvan form, and we'll... You know, it's not, I need this to stop from going crazy. It's, I need this to stop from being Bigfoot.
Right.
And so it could be the same thing. We just, I don't think we know.
Yeah, and I also don't think we don't know that they're just abominations. You know?
That the thing who that is not Vincent is not an abomination?
Yeah, the goats.
I mean, they could be.
Wait, it's three Billy Goats Gruff.
What?
You know, the children's tale.
Walk us through. Come on.
Okay, so there's the... so there's three... Okay, there's three of them. And one is big, and one is small, and one is smaller. And they all beat up a troll to get across a bridge. And there's a lesson we're supposed to learn.
Beat up every troll you find.
Yeah, beat up all the trolls.
I was going to talk about trolls too, but the troll toll is also good.
No, we're not giving them any more press. They fucking did it. We're done.
No, I think that's really interesting.
Troll tolls as a thing.
No, I think that's interesting. A good thought.
I only had that thought now, so I have no other evidence. So I got to go do some research for next episode.
How many goat men are there?
I mean, we saw three.
Yeah, we saw three by the end of the episode.
I didn't remember how many we saw. So
yeah, so he confronts the one who looks like Vincent, and then once he has him disarmed, the other two appear out of the forest, and Beacon decides to get pretty murdery, which is, again, let's just go there real quick, Justin McElroy Appreciation Zone. He's playing two different characters, and I love it, I love it, I love it, I love it, I love it.
Agreed. And we might finally get the player characters murdering somebody this episode.
Gonna get murdered by Beacon.
I've been waiting for somebody to get murdered.
It's all you want in life, really.
Mark might be toast too, so that's two for one.
I thought his name was Mike.
I thought it was Mark.
Well, he's probably dead. We did lose the car. The Lincoln.
Oh, yeah. I thought it screeched to a halt.
Oh, it didn't.
Well, it did, but then it got hit by the counterweight, and I'm imagining it's in a pretty bad way.
Well, the car, yes, but I don't think it ever hit the station. They all sort of rolled off the track and slid to tangle, slid to a halt. It's kind of like, you know, one of those things that, like, scree, and then stops right in front of the door of the station and never hits it.
It always stops at one on the show.
Yeah, exactly. That said, I agree that I loved the bit with Beacon. It was excellent the way he delineated. Duck wouldn't do it, but Griffin would coil himself around this guy's neck.
Well, Griffin wouldn't.
Well, not Beacon. Griffin. Well, okay.
I mean, Griffin might.
Griffin might too.
But he'd need a fun bell to make him do it or something.
That Beacon would wrap himself around this guy's neck and be like, don't worry, I'll kill you. I haven't been blooded in a long time.
Right, it's hungry. Or thirsty.
I don't know. Could you eat blood?
Thungry.
I won't. You can't take Thungry. Us there.
Thungry. I like
I
it.
I won't let you take us there.
Take us where?
To your damn portmanteau zone.
It's portmanteau corner.
The porner.
I'm putting markers all over this piece of track.
So let's move into discussing the mechanics of this episode. Let's talk about the gameplay and a little bit more meta. I still don't think Griffin knows what a hard move is.
Agreed.
Yeah, he takes Aubrey rolls very a two, light.
And her hard move is, ow, my head hurts.
Right, she needs to have broken her legs.
You know, and sure, maybe it can set something up later, but I feel like in the definitions that we were given, that seems like a soft move, because it's
well,
not...
I think that's an interesting thing, too, because in especially Aubrey's case, Travis is playing her with a lot more... what do I want to say? Like, disability or whatever it is based on her sort of lack of self-confidence, that he is curtailing her efforts much more than Griffin is.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair point. I think that's very interesting. Because it's like she wants to do this, but she can't. She's too anxious. And it seems interesting that he would make that choice And then Griffin doesn't, when Griffin has the opportunity to make a sort of that kind of choice for him, he just doesn't.
And I think, you know, I think if we had gone the other way, we would be giving Griffin some shit about railroading Travis to have his character not do things. But I think Travis has painted a very clear picture of what he thinks Aubrey's psyche is. And it would be pretty fair game for Griffin to sort of play off of that and put some additional restrictions on what she's able to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do appreciate,
especially when he rolls a two.
Right, yeah. Like, they all understand what that means, and maybe it's Travis trying to make up for it on the back end of, like, this shouldn't have gone well, so I'm going to go ahead and make a purposeful miss as a character choice.
Side note, how much do you think Travis misses just being able to roll on his desk and tell people the numbers?
I bet, yeah. He's not been doing great running on, what, 2.5 episodes now?
Yeah, it's been rough for him.
It's been bad.
He's never had that kind of streak during balance.
Well, because of all the rushing, you just sort of move past it.
Well, and all the...
Like, the 8 billion actions.
The cheating. I was thinking of the cheating. I do think it's interesting. I think the boys have gotten a lot better at the actual role-playing piece of this game. And maybe it's just because in Balance, I feel like they so embody their characters to some degree. Yep. Like, you just associate Taco with Justin, and you just... but in this, like, there were things I wanted them to do because I thought it would be cool. And they're just, you know, that's not what they're worried about. They're much more worried about being true to their character.
And I think this gets back to something we talked about a lot when they were doing sort of the mini arcs of not having the time to settle in and really find that voice. And I think we're finally seeing the back end of it now, where they are all really confident in the character they're playing, and they're confident making some pretty strong choices about what that character would do. And it's making a way better episode. Especially that I think now that they're comfortable in what their characters would do, they're maybe pushing back more on Griffin to make sure that the things they want to have happen will happen. I think the example being like Duck out in the parking lot, Griffin's like, well, you look around. He's like, well, no, Duck works in the forest all the time. He'd know what a disturbed forest looks like. And Griffin's like, okay, yeah, you see tracks leading off into the woods. Like, that was a great example of, again, Justin picking up a thing and be like, no, this is a truth that I hold for my character. He's really good at looking at forests and knowing what's wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. And I think, I mean, I do think Justin does it better than anybody else. I think Travis is getting there. I don't feel like there was a ton of... I feel like there was a lot of role-playing, but not as much in balance as he's required to do now as Aubrey. Like, really put himself in that position.
But I think Travis is starting to make some stronger choices and is getting there.
Yeah, I 100% agree.
And Aubrey, as a character, I find a billion times less annoying than she originally was.
Yeah, as she was in the mini arc, I don't think I could have done that.
Yeah.
And I feel like Clancy's really good at knowing where he's comfortable and being there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think he's making the... Sorry, Jake, but I don't think he's making the strongest commitments of things, but when that moment arises, he's going for it.
And so that's what I really appreciated about... So when he rushes to the car to run down the hill and save Mark, it's like, well, that doesn't feel like a Ned moment. But then the revelation that, oh, Mark's his customer.
Right, yeah, that's Dollar.
Oh, yeah, okay, there we go. And so I like that there was that room where you can definitely tell he's growing.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not, like, it hasn't been a sudden shift, you know. He's slowly working through, and I think that's something that... And I mean, I think we saw that with Merle a lot, too, is I think that Clint seems really good at the long game. And where maybe Justin and Travis are a little bit better about just being there.
Yeah, and I think sort of an asterisk on this whole conversation is I think Travis has set him up for a much more challenging roleplay than either of the other two have. He's playing a late teen, early 20s woman, a life for which he has zero experience being a guy in his now, I guess, 30s, mid-30s, something like that. So I think, you know, in fairness, that is a much harder role to jump into and sort of play confidently than Justin sort of maybe aging himself up as a park ranger, or Clint, I guess, aging himself up and making himself a little bit crazier as a crazy sort of shop owner crook kind of guy.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting comparing who they play now to who they played in Balance. Like, I think Ned and Merle, you can see a lot of similarities there. Like you said, I think it's been really a 180 with Travis and who he's being, who he's challenged himself to play. But the thing I think that stands out the most to me is the difference for Justin in how sort of muted Duck is compared to Taco, and that he doesn't have this these grandiose moves and just, oh, I call down, you know, Hordor's tentacles or whatever, to just, like, he doesn't have those kind of, maybe he has those capabilities, but he doesn't use them. And he's very much
not only not using them, but, like, perhaps actively running away from them.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Which we still don't know a lot about. I got two things I want to sort of dive on big picture real quick. First one's a short one. Dr. Harris Bonkers hasn't been in an episode for like 10 eps now? He's missing?
He was present in the in-between, at the Lodger interlude.
Yeah.
Because Danny was taking care of him.
Right. Was that... that was... not good enough. No, this was a central part of Travis's character, and it's gone.
Yeah, but I mean,
it had, they made a button.
I mean, that's true. As a podcast, they did lean into it pretty hard.
They did lean into it.
I think that might be part of it, is that they all had the same realization that we did, and it was like, oh wait,
this button doesn't make any fucking sense.
That is not maintainable.
I mean, yeah. It'd be funny to watch them try.
I would hate it so much.
Right. We would have to add an extra 50 minutes to every episode of, like, why the fuck is this bunny here? And just it'd be us. We'd record it once, and I'd just play it back every time.
Because the indignation that she carried, Aubrey carried with her during the mini arc is, I think, what made her character so grating.
Yeah.
Like, I just...
It certainly didn't help the onboarding of that character, so to speak.
No, I don't think so. I am not missing Dr. Harris Bonkers.
All right. Okay. And my second question, Minerva. She's gone, like, for a reason, because she exploded or something? Did I invent that? What happened? Something went wrong.
I thought she just disappeared. Like, she faded out before she was supposed to, and...
Yeah, but, at the...
So there was just a different premonition that there was an explosion?
Well, like, the premonition that there was an explosion was sort of that the world was going to end.
With a meteor, perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although, wasn't there something like you go outside and the sun was there or something?
Yes, that's sort of how it worked.
The sun was too close.
I think Minerva, I think, like, the last time we saw her, she was just, like, stuck. Like, standing perfectly still and...
Oh, yeah, that's right. Like, I...
Something was broken.
Yeah.
So, again, another thing that featured very strongly in the front end of Amnesty that we're not really getting at all. And I'm wondering if this is a thing where Griffin wants this to play out and see if Duck brings it up again, you know, if Justin wants to tie that back in, or if this is a thing they decided was a bad idea and they've now written it off. I mean, are they sort of editing that grandly?
Yeah, I think it will be interesting, and I think the thing that I sort of keep in the back of my mind is the fact that these last three episodes have taken place over like 2 days.
They're 24ing it, and I think it's great. Let's shorten this shit up. Keep it real time.
Well, and so, you know, would the Minerva storyline come back within 24 hours or 48 hours?
Well, I mean, if she's showing up at 6 whatever every night and she doesn't.
Right.
I think isn't that a place where ducks should start to wonder, even if it's been 2 days?
Like, yeah, but the second or third day with no Minerva, I think Duck raises a red flag somewhere. Like, it comes up in a conversation at the lodge or something.
But in those few days, you know, he's been almost smushed by a Pizza Hut sign and then fought a bunch of deer men. Goat men. So, like,
goat,
I mean...
Goat persons, perhaps. We don't actually know that.
True. Fair. Gersons?
I won't. Again.
Gersons. So, like, if you're preoccupied with that stuff, I could see it just, like, he hasn't been at his apartment where he would normally meet Minerva, so... You know, maybe out of sight, out of mind.
I guess that's fair. He did go however many years without seeing her, so.
Yeah, I guess it's just another thing that seems like it was going to be central to sort of Duck's development that is now, to me, conspicuously absent from the last couple of episodes.
Well, and I wonder if that's just because the situation hasn't gotten bad enough for Duck to develop anymore.
That there hasn't been an impetus for him to get a Minerva visit?
Yeah, right. Now that he might be about to get his ass kicked, you know.
Or kick some ass.
Either way. But realizing that he is still not at the top of his form, and if stuff like this is going to keep happening, maybe he does. And then he's like, oh wait, I haven't trained in a couple days.
Yeah. Right, or maybe he tries something that he thought he knew how to do and it goes wrong and maybe that sparks a search or something.
Yeah, I still think there's plenty of time to circle back to those points, like Minerva, Dr. Hairspunkers, for better or worse.
Yeah, a great point. There could be value in just cutting them out. Of this arc.
Same thing with Kirby and the FBI agent and the prisoner. Oh, right.
I forgot
about
the FBI agent.
Yeah, so.
Well, I think looking towards what might happen in the future with these characters leads us to a really good jumping into point for the Zone of Postulation.
Zone of Postulation.
Chris, lead us off.
So, I think Beacon does not kill the goat, but Duck has to try really, really hard to get it to get it to not do it. And I think all of next episode is going to be a very interesting exploration of what this trio of bipedal goats wants. Maybe with a lot of like dialogue. I think it might be a little less action-y than the last two episodes, but I think we're going to get a lot of exposition about Sylvain and why the goats are there. And I think we're still not going to get any answers to all those subplots we just talked about. But no goat death.
Colin?
I think Beacon goes crazy and kills all the goats. I think it would result in whatever this bomb is. I think Jake is right that they're probably not just lost sylphs, they're probably connected to this bomb in some way, that it just creates even, it's like a Hydra effect. You kill the 3 goat men, here are 30 goat men. And then Kepler's overrun by goat men, and they have to call in the savior, you know, big game hunters to take down the goats, and in comes Dick Cheney. So, that's my official prediction.
Jake
Cool Ices a goat. They want their family back.
All right. Cool.
I love it.
Well, thanks so much, everybody, for listening to We Do That, a Taz fan cast. We will be back in 2 weeks on Wrong Thursday with more thoughts, predictions, and general conversation. We thank you all so much for listening and spending some time with us. If you're thinking about us in the next 2 weeks, by all means, hit us up on Twitter at WeDoThat_pod or email us at WeDoThatPod@gmail.com. We would love to hear your thoughts and predictions so we can shamelessly steal them. A big thanks to the Early for our intro and outro music. We've tried something new this time. We're going to try to keep it a little bit shorter. Really actually let us know what you think about that part. Because maybe it's more fun. We'll get a little taste of stuff rather than us pontificating for a full hour. If you have thoughts, let us know. Otherwise, we're just going to keep making decisions. And boy, you don't want that. Until next time. Bye, everybody.